Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For right now, let's talk post-election politics. And it looks like Mitt Romney's final act as the Republican nominee for president is kicking half of America in the rear as he exits the stage and getting kicked back by many of his fellow Republicans. Last week, Romney told a conference call of some of his donors that President Obama won the election in part by showering ethnic minorities with financial gifts. Here's part of the clip that wasn't supposed to go public, but has become his 47% remark, part two. This is a minute and a half of Romney's conference call with donors.
What the president's campaign did was focus on certain members of his base coalition, give them extraordinary financial gifts from the government, and then work very aggressively to turn them out to vote, and that strategy worked.
I mean, it's a proven political strategy, which is give a bunch of money from the government to a group, and guess what? They'll vote for you. Let me tell you what I would do if I were a Democrat running 4 years from now. I'd say, you know what? Dental care ought to be included in Obamacare. Immigration we can solve, but the giving away free stuff is a hard thing to compete with. What the president did is he gave them two things. One, he gave them a big gift on immigration with the DREAM Act amnesty program, which was obviously very, very popular with Hispanic voters. And then number two was Obamacare. And so for any lower income Hispanic family, Obamacare was massive. I mean, for the average income for a household in America is $50,000 a year. That's the median, $50K per year. For the Hispanic household, my guess is it's lower than that. Maybe it's $40,000 a year. For a home earning, let's say, $30,000 a year, free health care, which is worth about $10,000 a year, I mean, it's massive. It's huge. So he did two very popular things for the Hispanic community.
A few different pieces there strung together of Mitt Romney in his conference call to donors last week. Let's talk about that and more with Molly Ball, political reporter for The Atlantic. Hi, Molly. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Great to be here.
And Romney is getting seriously trashed by his own party mates for this parting shot. Here, just as one example, is his erstwhile best surrogate, Governor Chris Christie.
You can't expect to be a leader of all the people and be divisive. Okay? You have to talk about themes, policies that unite people and play to their aspirations and their goals and their hopes for their family and their neighbors. And I always hate this kind of scapegoating after elections. I mean, when you lose, you lost.
Chris Christie on Morning Joe. What do you make of what Romney said, Molly, and the reaction to it from Christie and Bobby Jindal and Lindsey Graham and others from within his own party?
Well, a couple things. I think, first of all, as you said before, it really echoes the 47% comments, which, when all we had was that, could be sort of written off as an anomaly or something he didn't mean to say. But it really seems like that worldview hasn't changed or wasn't a mistake. It's how he really feels. And there's a surprising amount of bitterness that he's expressing, too. And as Christie sort of alluded to in that clip, a real refusal to take responsibility. He seems to be saying there's nothing he could have done. He was up against this sort of immovable force. He's blaming the voters, which is never a graceful thing to do when you lose. So, and then when you talk about all of the other Republicans who are sort of piling on this and distancing themselves from this worldview, I think, first of all, that's just based on the merits of what he's said. People don't want to be associated with that. But it's also giving Republicans an excuse to put Romney behind them and try to open a new chapter as they regroup and look for a way to retool the party with a message that will be more appealing in the years ahead.
Is there a grain of truth in there, maybe not the way he put it, but that's worth dwelling on for just a minute, that politicians give things to constituent groups who might show up and vote for them or finance their campaigns on all sides? So Republicans give gifts to the coal industry by posing as global warming skeptics, or gift to the populist religious right by promising to ban abortions, including after rapes, and then funding faith-based groups and funding religious schools with tax money and promising to try to do more of that. Democrats give gifts to Latinos by President Obama's DREAM Act order or his public endorsement in an election year of legal gay marriage as a civil right, a gift to – that's a non-financial gift to gays and lesbians. We could go down that list on either side. Is there a certain legitimacy in Romney's remarks that's universal to politics?
Yeah, I mean, I think political scientists would tell you and have studied at length how the different ways in which people vote their interests. I mean, in the simplest terms, people will vote for politicians who they feel have made their lives better, whether that's the lives of their identity group or the lives of, you know, society overall. I think it's kind of a dead end to start debating which party does that more, which candidate does that more. At the end of the day, certainly all politicians are trying to improve people's lives in some material way.
So this has led to many denunciations, as we've been saying. We played Christie. But I wonder, when you say the Republican Party is trying to put Romney behind them and move on and don't really accept in many cases the premise behind there, I wonder if Romney's statement also goes to a larger problem with the party. And here's just a very short but pithy 6-second bite of how George Will put it on ABC this week.
You have a political problem when the voters don't like you, but you got a real problem when the voters think you don't like them.
That's pretty interesting. You have a political problem when the voters don't like you. You have a real problem when you don't like the voters. And here is Republican strategist Mike Murphy on Meet the Press framing it as an existential threat to the party.
This is an existential crisis for the Republican Party, and we have to have a brutal discussion about it. We alienate young voters because of gay marriage. We have a policy problem. We alienate Latinos, the fastest-growing voter group in the country, because of our fetish on so-called amnesty when we should be for a path to immigration. And we've lost our connection to middle-class economics. We also have an operative class, unfortunately, a lot of which is incompetent. We don't know how to win. So this isn't about new software in the basement of the RNC. It's not about a few Spanish-language radio ads. It's a fundamental rethink that begins with policy, because the country's changing, and if we don't modernize conservatism, we can go extinct.
If we don't modernize conservatism, we can go extinct. So, Molly, is that an oxymoron? Is conservatism, by definition, the rejection of the modern?
No, I don't think so. And I've been impressed with how rapid and how public this sort of rethinking is in Republican circles. I don't think we know where it's headed yet. I think it's still in the early stages. There's certainly some recrimination, some denial, some of the sort of circular firing squad you get after every loss.
Right.
But there's
and
been
certainly
a lot
the Democrats have always been very good at that after they lose.
Exactly. And I'm sure there's plenty of gloating on that side, too, at the fact that they're not the ones on that end of the coin this time. But there's also been a very impressive amount of very frank, very heartfelt sort of soul-searching by sort of earnest partisans who want to understand how the message got to a place where so many people find it so unappealing. And as you heard in that clip from Mike Murphy, who I think is really smart, it's a question of we have to examine our policies and make those more accessible to people and maybe even change what we stand for. And it's also a way of an examination of tone and outreach and how do we not be unfriendly to people. As George Will was saying, how do we not make people think that we don't like them? And so there's really a lot of this very honest, I think, soul-searching going on.
So conservative and Republican listeners, react to any of this for a few minutes. React to Mike Murphy there on modernizing conservatism. If you're a conservative, do you recoil from that language or embrace it? 212-433-WNYC. If you're a conservative or a Republican, do you think Romney was just speaking the truth? Or do you want to run him off the post-election stage too? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 if you are a Republican or a conservative. If you do want to modernize conservatism, does that mean just positioning or actually reinspecting your values on maybe who's deserving among the poor or how to view people who are here illegally or the meaning of Obamacare for America and insurance? Conservatives, are the Republican politicians calling for a new way speaking for you since the election, or are they turning their backs on you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. 9-2 as we continue with Molly Ball, political reporter for The Atlantic. And Molly, while those calls are coming in, let's touch on a couple of other things that are going on right now, Benghazi and the fiscal cliff. And on the cliff, here is Democratic House Leader Nancy Pelosi on ABC this week.
There's too much at risk. And even if you went over the cliff for 1 month and then corrected it, you would still have a loss of GDP.
So there's Nancy Pelosi saying, don't go over the fiscal cliff, which some liberals are saying, oh, what the heck, go over the fiscal cliff. It's not going to be that bad, and it'll make taxes go up, and it'll cut the Pentagon. So what's going on?
Well, that was an interesting statement by Pelosi, because like you say, there have been a lot of Democrats sort of, whether they're bluffing or whether they're actually threatening, wanting to make it seem like they were willing to go over this ledge or this step or whatever, however you want to characterize it, in order to convince Republicans that they're serious about the sort of red lines that they've drawn. There has been a remarkable amount of comity coming out of Congress after the initial negotiations on Friday. We didn't know sort of, we still don't know what they agree on, but they seem to think that there were things to agree on, and that's certainly a change from past negotiations. Both sides have laid out sort of fundamentally incompatible markers of sort of things that they will not give up, whether it's Republicans saying they won't raise tax rates or Democrats saying that they will let the Bush tax cuts on upper incomes expire. So we still don't know how that fundamental impasse can be resolved. But there does seem to be a spirit of cooperation. I think politically both sides realize that voters want to see cooperation. They're sick of the gridlock. And so until push comes to shove and we find ourselves, you know, working till midnight on Christmas, then we may be less positive about this process. But at least the initial stages, there seems to be a lot of promising noises coming out.
I like the way you made very sure to pronounce the T when you said there's a lot of comedy coming out of Congress right now.
Right, not comedy, not ha-ha.
Remember that moment in the Republican primaries when they asked if they would take $10 in spending cuts for $1 in tax hikes to close the deficit, and none of them would? You think the members of Congress on the Republican side would give the same answer today? Is the ratio part of the equation to getting to yes?
I do think it's part of the equation. I don't think any of them are staking out that extreme a position anymore. In fact, it's pretty remarkable, given how long that has been a hill to die for Republicans, how quickly they have signaled that they are willing to let taxes go up. Now, again, they disagree on how to do that. They don't want rates to rise, but they say that they are willing to close loopholes, eliminate deductions, potentially a cap on deductions, which is something that Romney actually proposed during the campaign. These are all various ways of Republicans saying we're willing to raise taxes, and that is a lot farther than they've gone in the past. I think Democrats see it as a signal that Republicans do recognize Democrats came out of the election with some kind of a mandate from voters. Obama campaigned very aggressively on raising taxes on the wealthy. There was really very little ambiguity about where the two candidates stood on that. No presidential election is a pure policy referendum, but to the extent that it was clear, and it was clear in the exit polls when the question was asked as well, that voters agreed with that position. So you have Republicans already ceding some ground, even in the initial position they've laid out.
All right. Let's hear from some of our Republican and conservative calls about all this kicking each other after the election and all this talk about how the party has to change. 212-433-WNYC. Are all these politicians who are saying we have to change speaking for you, or are they abandoning your values? 212-433-9692. Let's try Edward in Morristown. You're on the air. Hi, Edward.
Yes, Brian. I've run for office a few times as a Republican in a Democratic town, and I find that many times Democrats will vote for me after they speak with me. The reason why I mention this is because I don't think we need to change our message. I just think we need to explain it better, because modernizing it doesn't really, it just takes away from, you know, the core beliefs, what we believe is, which is smaller government and more efficient government.
So the thing that Romney had said about the 47%, or the way he put a similar thought in that tape to the donors conference call with the donors we just played, that's making a lot of news, do you think he was saying the right thing, just saying it in the wrong way?
Well, in that context, he was obviously wrong. I mean, if he was working in a university, a professor would not speak like that. You don't. Sometimes, you know, he maybe looks like he's in an ivory tower, because you make statements like that, what you tend to do is alienate people. I think with the context of how conservatives speak, they have to speak more in terms of inclusiveness and, you know, be careful. You have to be careful with what you say, because words come back to bite you. It just shows a lack of sophistication.
But was the idea behind those words right? And how would you put the same thing if you think the idea was right?
No, the words behind it, what he was saying was, if you go to many areas of the country, such as like Camden or Irvington over here in New Jersey, there's a sense in the public that they feel hopeless. They feel hopelessness. So what they do is many people tend to rely on the government for many of their needs. They've kind of lost that vision that I can do it myself. So I think that's what he was talking about, is the people that have just kind of mm-hmm. given up on the free mm-hmm. enterprise system.
Edward, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. All right, Molly Ball, as a political analyst, would that last way that Edward in Morristown put it help win elections for the Republican Party, or would it just have the same effect?
I found his comments very interesting, because what he was saying was that all we need to do is change how we sell the message. But then he was saying that this message in particular that Romney was espousing was the wrong message.
Yeah.
And so we do have a lot of competing messages coming out of the Republican Party. Something that I believe it was Marco Rubio said shortly after the election that I thought was very effective was, he was saying, yes, it's a problem that too many people are on food stamps, but the answer to that is to give them opportunities. The answer is not to make food stamps less generous or to cut them off. And so I think what you hear someone like the caller saying is sort of echoing that message, giving people that sense of opportunity and giving them a way to do it that maybe is the traditional Republican, you know, up by your bootstraps methodology, but not blaming them for being dependent.
Let's try William in Manhattan. William, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning, Brian. I've always listened to your show, but this is the first time I've called.
I'm glad you called.
I agree with some of your callers, but the problem is that this message of opportunity is no longer present in the United States, and the Democrats can only hold the line at some point where big government is no longer sustainable and the promise of candies and goodies are no longer affordable. I come from California, and I think the Democratic Party there has ended, because we just passed, what is it, Prop 30?
Mm-hmm.
Which is tax and spend, and there's still a projected shortfall after this referendum that they had.
It's to raise money specifically for education out there, I think, right?
Correct, but when, you know, the people in the state over there look at the whole panorama and step back and look at the painting, they see that there's still shortfalls. The state has problems with illegal immigration. One out of three babies are what you call an anchor baby. And it's a runaway mess, education.
So do you think yes. that Romney was saying what needed to be said, and now you're disappointed in all these other Republicans who are running away from him?
No, I think he said what needed to be said, and at some point in the future, at a very close future, this fiscal cliff is going to throw the Democrats off it, too, because they can no longer sustain this message of inclusiveness through bigger government.
William, thank you very much. And Molly Ball, I think we're seeing, even in just the two callers, the sort of lines of demarcation of figuring out how to go forward, because conservatives don't want there to be, as some have put it this week, two liberal parties in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We have one liberal party, the Democratic Party, and then we need a conservative party, the Republican Party, they're saying. And if they go to path to citizenship for people here illegally, if they go to embracing Obamacare because it's not seen as a financial gift, and whatever, then what's left of the Conservative Party?
Sure. And, you know, I thought it was interesting that the caller brought up California, where voters did just approve a ballot initiative to raise their own taxes, and they awarded Democrats a supermajority in the state legislature. So Republicans may sincerely believe that California is going off a cliff. Voters don't seem to agree, or at least they seem to still find what Democrats are putting forward more appealing than what Republicans are proposing. There also is, I think, a bit of a misunderstanding about the fiscal cliff. A lot of people believe that the fiscal cliff is raising the deficit, when in fact, if we go off the fiscal cliff, a lot of bad things may happen. It may throw the economy back into recession, but it would lower the deficit substantially, because what the fiscal cliff consists of is a bunch of different deadlines that all converge, some of which involve cutting massive amounts of government spending, and some of which involve raising everybody's taxes. But the combined effect of both of those things is to lower the deficit substantially, not to raise it, and that is the way in which it would have economic consequences.
Molly Ball, political reporter for The Atlantic. One more thing before you go that maybe ties this all together in, you know, in a political package. Is Benghazi the new political center of Republican Party politics? Here is Lindsey Graham, and these 40 seconds are just part of a long rant on the president's failures on that on Meet the Press yesterday.
What about the rise of al-Qaeda in Benghazi? What about the British ambassador closing the consulate in Benghazi because it was too dangerous for the British? What about the Red Cross leaving? What about all the warnings come out of Benghazi? Did the CIA tell the president that Benghazi is falling into the hands of al-Qaeda? And I blame the president more than anybody else. Susan Rice is a bit player here. Was he informed of the June attack on our consulate where they blew a hole where 40 people could go through? Was he aware of the August 15th cable where Stevens was saying we can't withstand a coordinated al-Qaeda attack? There are 10 militia groups all over Benghazi. I blame the president,
Senator,
for making this a death trap.
Lindsey Graham with a teeny little bit of David Gregory trying to get in there. And that was about a third of that entire clip. But is this the new Republican Party, just from a political standpoint? And obviously Benghazi raises serious issues, which we've talked about before and we'll talk about again. But from a political standpoint for this question, is this the new Republican Party? Kick Romney on his articulation of fiscal conservatism, scratch their heads on how much they're willing to go against Grover Norquist on taxes, and kick the president hard on foreign policy. Is this a coordinated thing?
I don't have any specific intelligence that it is a coordinated thing, but I think you raise a really interesting possibility. As you were saying before, Republicans have to find a way that they don't just become a party that agrees with the Democrats on everything for political purposes. They need to offer a contrast. So, in fact, this may be a way that they can, you know, sort of loudly disagree, blast the president day in, day out for these foreign policy perceived failures, and at the same time sort of quietly agree or quietly cede some ground on things like taxes and immigration, where they recognize that they may be out of step with the voters and need to put those issues sort of behind them.
Molly Ball, political reporter for The Atlantic. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.
And conservatives, keep the conversation going on our webpage about modernizing the conservative party, as Republican strategist Mike Murphy put it. Should that be the language of change after this election? Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll ask, did the left win the culture wars through this election, with Jonathan Haidt, who wrote a very fascinating book on the moral center of both sides in the culture wars. But first, we'll check in, now that the presidential election is over, on, I promise to do this only just for a few minutes, the New York City mayoral election, which is now in full swing, and one major candidate dropped out yesterday. We'll find out who. Stay with us.